Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug. Did you know that I write kids' books? If you have children, nieces, nephews, I have books that are totally available for free or $10 on Amazon for physical copies. You can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/kidsbooks to get access and learn more about that. Thank you for all of your support. Now let's get back to the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lou the Legendary. Instead of Legendary Lou. Legendary. What?
Hey, I'll take it. Just call me the Blue Eyes, except I got Blue Eyes. The Blue Eyes Lou Dragon.
Well, either way, welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. We're glad to have you back. Thank you for listening and showing support. Okay, real quick. I got an email this week, and I've signed up to a few email lists, marketing email lists. You know, we got Plug It Alliance, Cornef Audio, Mixland, and today we're going to talk about the one that Jesse sent out this week on Mixland. And I'm actually going to read the entire thing, Lou.
Okay.
Because you haven't read it before yet, so I'm going to read the entire thing. It's not super long, and then we're going to talk about it. Because I think this is actually a very well-crafted email, but not just that. I think this is a great story that we can all learn from. And so before I kind of preface it anymore and spoil the story, I'm just going to start reading it. So this is literally an email. And the email is like, a note on collaboration. The art of collaboration, turning frustration into creative fuel. This past week, I was neck deep in the studio, finishing up an album for a really talented band. The pressure was on. The songs were really special, although the challenges were plentiful. Let's just say there were moments where I questioned the whole experience. Was the frustration worth the final product? The answer is yes. However, getting to that yes and getting to the finish line came down to one thing, aligning visions with the team. And more often than not, there's always that one guy, the one who, for whatever reason, makes things a little or a lot more difficult. You know the type. On this particular project, it was the drummer. Those damn drummers. Here's the thing, collaborating in creative spaces is basically a masterclass in human psychology. We're all vulnerable artists here, and egos can run wild. So how do we navigate these situations and find a way to collaborate, even with the trickier personalities? My dad always had a great philosophy. When dealing with a so-called enemy, turn it into a game. A win-win game, that is. The game is called Disarm Your Enemies and Win Them Over. Here's a real-life example. Years ago, during the birth of my first child, there was a nurse. Let's just say that she wasn't exactly a ray of sunshine. Fast forward a few years, same hospital, second kid is on the way. And guess who walks in for her shift? Yep, you guessed it. Now, I could have negatively taken over. Sorry, let me reread that. Now, I could have let negativity take over, but instead, I decided to play the game. Through genuine conversation and some solid human connection, we unlocked a completely different side to her. The key, disarming with dialogue, not flattery. Forget cheesy compliments and fake charm. The key here is thoughtful dialogue and building genuine trust. This applies in the studio, at home, with your spouse, you name it. This week with the, quote, difficult drummer, I swallowed my pride and went the extra mile to foster a truly collaborative environment. Every word from the producer was met with eye contact and respect. No suggestion was dismissed. All were explored with enthusiasm and open-mindedness. Critiques became a springboard for creativity, never a source of negativity. This wasn't just about politeness. It was about building trust. I had to prove to them that I'm equally as invested in making a masterpiece as he was. And here was the magic trick. We discovered a shared sense of humor early on. Jokes became a kind of creative language, making the process not just productive, but fun. Remember, they're passionate too. Here's the thing. That, quote, difficult, quote, person. Sorry, let me say that again. Quote, person. Here's the thing. That, quote, difficult person likely shares your passion for the project. They have a vision for the sound, a desire for tangible results. Our job is to bring that gap. Our job is to bridge that gap to translate their vision into a reality they can never. Oh my goodness, sorry. Our job is to bridge that gap to translate their vision into a reality they can hear and feel. The importance of every note. Let's not downplay the importance of the job we get to do. For the artists, this is their life's work, their ultimate calling. It's a privilege for us to be part of bringing that vision to life. Music is powerful, and the work we do, whether you're a seasoned engineer or a recording student just starting out, is valuable at every single step. We have the potential to change lives through the music we help create. So let's get down in the trenches together. We are never too big to get our hands dirty and dig in on the hard work, because sometimes the most beautiful music comes from the most challenging collaborations. Signed, Jesse.
Nice.
Isn't that great?
I like it.
We talk a lot about, like, on the podcast, we talk a lot about egos and how to navigate through them. We talk about
communication.
Communication. Yeah. We talk about, I mean, this is part of the reason why I love psychology so much, because I do feel like in what we do, the part of the reason why I can only guess and surmise that Rick Rubin does so well. I mean, he's openly admitted that he doesn't know theory or music that well, right? I doubt that. Yeah. I doubt that it's as much as he claims. You know, he probably knows a little bit.
He knows enough to get by.
Yeah. But the biggest thing that, without a doubt, all of the reviews about him, artists that have worked with him, all say the same thing. Like, he's kind of like a therapist. He's a psychologist in the studio, allowing people to let out their innermost creativity without any sort of shame or embarrassment. And I think that that is so important to understand. Lou, was there any parts of this that stood out especially to you?
Yeah, it's one part that I can resonate, which is, you know me. When we first started the studio, I said, hey, when it comes to the clients, let me deal with them. You know, I'm good with clients when they have a bad day. You know, like if there's some troublesome ones or anything, just let me deal with them. And it's not necessarily that the clients are troublesome or anything. It's just that not everybody knows how to deal with the difficult conversation, where if you have customer service experience, like whether that be on the sales floor or something, or because not every salesperson has to deal with returns and all that. Right. Like the salesman pitched me on this and that. It's like, hey, I'm really sorry. That guy's retarded. Right. And it's like, whoa, wait, what? You're agreeing with me? It's like sometimes it's just about getting on middle ground where you can kind of see eye to eye with each other so you can get to the next point. So funny enough, he talks about, like, you know, that so in, that quote unquote difficult person isn't actually difficult. It's just that you kind of have to learn a way to kind of win them over so that you can actually just get to the next step and actually find where everybody's happy again. Because right now there's just this little bit of difficulty in front of you. It's not that that person is right or wrong. It's just that you need to move over that hump of difficulty.
Yeah, there's so many things. First off, shout out to Jesse for sending this out from the Mixland newsletter.
Yeah.
This is such an important topic, and it's not just one topic. There's a few topics. I like this. Here's the thing. Collaborating in creative spaces is basically a masterclass in human psychology. We're all vulnerable artists here.
Yeah.
And when we're all vulnerable, egos can run wild.
Yeah.
And it's this thing, it's fun. It's funny, like recently something that I've been thinking about more in the forefront of my mind is projection through being defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's funny how often we naturally become defensive, even to like comments or especially to people speaking to us. We don't want to be misunderstood. We don't want to be seen as the enemy.
Yeah.
We do something called costly signaling, which you can look up in order to show that we are on the same team. Right? And I'm finding that oftentimes we have a lot more ego in the sense that we do care about the way people think about us, the way people care about us. Even I, who say outwardly and manifest all the time that I don't give a shit. And I think that I've kind of proved it in a way of like doing this podcast. And I say some of the wildest shit I've ever said in my entire life publicly, and I don't edit it out. You know that? Some people look at me and they're like, damn, DK doesn't give a shit. And I think I actually do, but I'm learning to manage it. And I think that's a skill that I'm learning. And I still find myself becoming naturally defensive. I'm becoming a little bit more sensitive and understanding, perceiving when others start to become defensive and what that means for them. It's usually some sort of projection of something inside. I don't know, this idea that like we're all vulnerable creatives. We're all vulnerable artists here. Egos can run wild. And how do we deal with that? It is tricky sometimes, but they're never our enemy. The cool thing about being an engineer is that no matter what, me and the artist, you know, Lou and the artist, we're all on the same page. We all want the same thing. For different reasons. Maybe I want a gold record or a platinum record, right? Or a Grammy.
Yeah.
Maybe the artist does too, but we all want the same thing, which is a hit song. Like the best song that we've ever worked on, ever.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we kind of start fighting against each other and it becomes a battle of semantics and how we use language to define our feelings and not respecting each other. And even though we all want the same things. For example, this is something that, sorry, I'm thinking out loud here. I've had some thoughts recently, like, March 21st is, Down Syndrome Awareness Day or World Down Syndrome Day or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was thinking about how, my son and I am mostly offended by people who overprotect him, people that use his disability to virtue signal. I think that is the most offensive thing. Like, I think that people should not bully him. Bullying is bad across the board, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you are the type of person who'll make fun of someone, and then you turn to my son and unable to make fun of him because of his disability, you think it's out of kindness. No, that is almost the equivalent of someone saying, oh, we can't make fun of him because he is indeed a lower life form. And I don't see... Like, if you're going to make fun of him, if you're going to tease someone, like, you better include him, too. And it's funny, because that's, like, a pretty brutal way. Like, I'm all about resilience. And then another parent be like, don't ever say the R word. Don't ever be bullied. We don't ever want anybody to, like, and it kind of takes this protective route. And we look at solving the problem this different ways. But we all want the same thing, which is to love, protect, and respect the child, right? We all want the same outcome. We're just saying different words and using different languages coming from different personal experiences to get there. Does that make sense? So I'm starting to see like the symptoms of the problem versus the problems and its separation. And I know that this is not like the biggest insight ever, but I'm starting to see when I start arguing with someone or like if I start to disagree with someone, I start to understand and not feel a huge desire or trying to control my desire to speak up and to become defensive and to explain my case and to be right. And I'm finding more of a reason to shut up, not need to prove myself, to listen and figure out where we're going wrong. And we're probably on the same page. We're just coming at it. We want the same results, but we're just coming at it from different angles.
Maybe two different people at the same time trying to be right at the same time when it's okay for there to just be a difference.
Or yeah, or they're both right. They're just coming at it from different angles, yeah. and they're just unable to align, right?
Yeah.
And I love how he says that it goes for everything. It's not just in the creative field with doing what we do for work. It's also like with family, with our spouses, with our children.
I know I'm going to mess this up, so you can fill in the last name for me, Ben something. It's not Shapiro. I did that last time. But he talks about like the importance of like, hey, when you have some kind of strain between you and your spouse, whoever that may be, instead of trying to win the argument at the end of the day, what you're really doing is building a foundation on that relationship that you have where it's like, be afraid to speak up because I'm here to prove you wrong, you know, instead of just hearing each other out and trying to figure out where the difference is.
Yeah, that's true. Especially yeah, like, there's
you don't want to build a relationship like that.
Yeah, there's that's difficult. That's difficult. There's a lot of nuance to that and a lot of variance. I like a partner that critiques everything I say. Not everything, but I mean...
you would rather have somebody be honest with you about their opinion and view on something
yeah,
rather than somebody that lets you continue down a path that they may not agree with.
Yeah, instead like, yeah, instead my wife just wants to be heard sometimes, right? And I think that's pretty typical, stereotypical across the board for spouses. Yeah. Anyway, what else did they say? For the artist, it's their life work. It's their entire calling. It's their life calling.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like the idea of gamifying winning them over.
Mm-hmm.
I think winning other over, so there's a, this is, by the way, the only personality test that is actually backed by psychology is the Big Five personality test. What is it? Openness, conscientiousness, neuroticism, extroversion, and one more, I'm missing one, agreeableness. And I'm thinking... I think everybody should take that test. Like those, that's like a generic test that you can find out a little bit more about yourself. And that is backed by science and statistics. And each like certain levels of, for example, like income is directly correlated to, is inversely correlated to agreeableness. Meaning, the more agreeable you are across the board, statistically, the lower income you will be. This is part of the argument of fair pay. Women are also statistically significantly more agreeable than men are without across cultures and countries. Interesting. But we're not, I'm not here to speculate why or what that means, but it's good to understand a little bit more about yourself to figure out where, which ways you want to go in, how to use your strengths, how to improve your weaknesses, et cetera. But there is another test. The reason why I'm talking about this is because there is a another test that is backed less. The Galien-Kruger, it's like a 36, what is it? The 36 talents or something like that. Everybody has the 30, like there's a list of 36 talents or skills that people have. And your top five are like, the most in tune with what you like, how your brain works, and your bottom five like suck energy from you. So if you try to solve problems using the bottom five techniques, then yeah, you're just sucking energy out. It just sucks for you. It's difficult. That being said, sorry, this is a roundabout way of saying one of the most rare and difficult skills to achieve on this test is the skill of winning others over, which is one of the talents, one of the 36 talents. And I will say across the board, being aware of this test and having read the book that talks about and how to use it in business, et cetera, it's more for management to figure out how to team people up. It's very interesting to see how those that are doing well, like at these Grammy parties and at any sort of networking event, those that are doing well, they may be super introverted, they may be a little bit weird, but they all are pretty good when it comes to a conversation. They all are exceptionally good at winning others over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not through brown nosing. That's another thing that I want to talk about on this. Lou, like you're good at winning others over, even though you're self-proclaiming to be an introvert.
You can be an introvert and good at conversations when you need to be.
Is that something that you feel like you learned, or is this something that's more innate?
I think it's something that I had to learn even before getting into music. For instance, if you're ever going to work a job and you have to work as part of a team, you have to learn to be either a team leader or be a part of the team. And there's a very clear difference between the two. Now, when you're younger, you're not really trusted with a lot of responsibility. So you have to learn what it means to be a, you know, somebody who's part of the team without being somebody that's just thrown around, because obviously nobody wants to be the guy that is only responsible for taking out the trash for too long. Obviously that's where you start, but you know, if you were an intern at a studio and that's all you ever got trusted for and you never spoke up like, hey, I'd like to do more. How can I help more? Hey, how can I do this? Part of it is you obviously want people to like you. And so you just kind of had to learn how to communicate without being the weirdo in the room, because you also don't want to be the guy that's like oversharing on the first conversation, right? Nobody wants to know about your dead dog the day they met you. You know, so it's something that I definitely had to learn pretty early on. But it's kind of how you see my lifestyle, where I much prefer to be home and working with people that I like and that I know I can communicate well. Socializing at events, like going by myself, it's like when people say, oh, you go to a movie theater by yourself, that's so brave. I'm like, yeah, that is pretty brave in my eyes, because that's pretty intimidating. You know, going to a social networking event, like let's say a studio mixer, and you go by yourself, that's pretty brave. Like, what was it? We went to the one that used to be 17 Hertz and we saw James there. And James just went by himself. I had so much respect for that guy that day. I was like, this man did something that I don't think I've ever done in like the 13 years I've been doing this. But learning how to communicate and learning how to build relationships is something that you have to know, whether you're an introvert or not. But learning how to communicate with people for the first time, learning how to introduce yourself without, you know, being a douche at the very least, is kind of a big thing. And for me, the big middle ground is I try to figure out people's like sense of humor. If we can laugh together, then chances are everything else will be fine. So for instance, I've told everybody, like, if we can't talk shit with each other, then we're not friends. Like, me and you were texting the other day. You're like, dude, my head is going to grow after finding out this news. And I'm like, well, if you'd like, I can talk shit to you to the moon.
No. Yeah,
because that's how I see a lot of friends. Once you know that border has been dropped of like, oh, you can't say certain things to people, you'll burn the relationship. It's like, you know, the funny thing is their friends will all say it. So I'd like to get to that point with them. So I try to figure out people's sense of humor. And I think that's maybe where I have some luck. I don't necessarily think I'm some cool guy that wins people over with my hobbies. I collect Pokemon cards and I like anime. And I like nerding out about, you know, studio stuff. That's not very generally cool in most communities.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, there's, I love the idea, and I'm going to kind of piece together and kind of pull more out of this, but
sure.
I love the idea of, and I'm starting to learn more the value and what that means of disarming with dialogue, not flattery. One of the biggest things that you see everybody complain about, like the people that are doing well that complain about and are most wary about, is flattery, aka brown nosing. And it's really weird. And I'm going to try my best to describe it. I think the most important sentence about that written in this article is Jesse writes, every word from the producer was met with eye contact and respect. Now, we're all taught to look people in the eye when we talk to them, but we get shy, we get nervous, and we don't have the self-discipline, the eye discipline, to look them in the eye when they are talking or when we ask them questions or when we compliment them, et cetera, et cetera. It's very fake. But more practically speaking, I want y'all to think about this. This is something that becomes more apparent the older you get or the better that you do, is okay, so think about it like this. If you are a celebrity and someone is very kind to you, you can't tell if you'll be unable to tell if this person is actually kind or if they want something from you.
Yeah, right? That's
and
huge.
To make it harder, the person who is being kind to you also will have a hard time being able to tell, to be able to discern if they are being kind to you because they like you or if they want something from you. So it makes it double difficult. Have you ever, like, hanging out with a celebrity, we are kind to them because we don't want to get fired, right? Most of the time. It's very rare. Like, that's why most people can't shit talk the celebrities they're hanging out with, because they don't want to be fired, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, all of the celebrities' best friends are people that have the courage to shit talk them back.
Yep.
And so, and obviously, if you start doing that from the beginning, it doesn't work well. Or maybe it will.
I've met like one or two that actually worked out with, and yeah. It's been fun.
It's been
fun.
Actually, I feel like that would work more than you'd think. It'd be funny, especially in a playful manner. That's hard to do. But there is something really important about not over-complimenting each other. And this is not some sort of masculine male thing. I think the book, The Courage to Be Disliked by, what's his name? Kishimi Ichiro. He writes a chapter about the idea of complimenting and how he even goes as far, because it's a philosophy psychology book. And he even writes about how he uses it in the context of parents to children. He even argues that parents should not compliment their children. And he has a really solid argument for the book that I won't ruin for you, partially because I also can't remember the exact argument. but go back and read it if you want to. But he says, when I say something to you, Lou, like this is, you did a great job, like with this record, it can mean that comes from a place, usually compliments come from a place of understanding that you don't know what you're doing and I do. Like this only is taken this way by someone with a really fragile ego, but this kind of proves it through that, right? Like, have you ever been complimented and then been irked by it?
Yeah.
Like someone compliments you like, damn, dude, that shot, like you had a great shot right there. Like they're complimenting you, but they're all the purpose of the compliment is socially making you aware that they are above you. Does that make sense? It's this weird subconscious portrayal of hierarchy, social hierarchy, when you compliment someone sometimes. So for example, we don't tell our neighbor who is moving, wow, you would do a really good job packaging these boxes. You know? Like, what was the example? If a neighbor helps us, we say, thank you. That is very kind of you. Like, thank you for doing that. Right. We don't say like, wow, you're like, I don't know. I can't do the example quite right. I need to find the example from the book.
I have a good one. It's like, God damn, this guy's really good at folding fabric. It's like, what?
Yeah. And this is most taken offensively by those with really, really big egos. I don't want to say too many specific examples because then it can become political and in that sense. But in general, being careful with compliments, I think, is being over-complimentive. Is that even a word? Can make you seem odious. That's just what it is. So if you want to be liked, don't over-compliment, be a friend. And that is difficult, but I think anybody that's listening to the podcast can practice by meeting new people. That is something that you can learn. And when you are, if you do want to say something kind, obviously not fanboying is like the baseline, right?
Yeah.
It's like, of course, the obvious bit. But we're even talking about like don't compliment something unless you know what you're talking about. Like, unless you really are a fan. Like, don't go up to Tizio and be like, dude, I love Chris Brown records, if you've never heard Chris Brown records and you just know he's famous for liking Chris Brown. Like, there's no reason to compliment. It's this weird thing that comes with it. Everybody that's doing well, even myself, like, who's very hyper aware of this stuff, we don't like to be overly complimented. Lou, yeah. Like you immediately, if you get complimented, you say fuck you, like as a joke.
Yeah, no, I say it lovingly. So if you guys
lovingly,
ever
but
hear
at the same
that,
time,
yeah.
It's because you can't handle it, right? Like it's hard.
Yeah, I don't like being put on a pedestal for personal reasons. Don't do that.
Regardless of personal reasons, I'm saying yeah. that's fairly generalized across the board. And
yeah.
if they do yeah. like it, they don't deserve those compliments. That's what it is.
Yeah. Like one of the compliments I literally as recently as like a week ago this happened. Somebody DM'd me and they're like, "Hey bro, I just wanted to connect with you. I would just wanted to reach out and say, bro, I love your work. It's been so amazing finding out who worked on all these records. Like
red
I
flag,
love
red
the way
flag.
You but here's the biggest red flag." He said, "I sing along to Keisha's Love all the time and I didn't know you worked on that." Love.
And you did it. Yeah, you did it.
Yeah, that was like 2005. That yeah. was like high
yeah,
school, middle school, Lou.
No.
Yeah. So the funny thing is like, I'm like, okay, one, you didn't do your research. Two, if you did do at least some minimal research to me, if you look at like my
Well, he might have been things, misinformed too. They might
have been misinformed. But maybe, but you know, the other side is like if you look at any of my reels, like I even make fun of the idea of like, am I wearing pants right now? There's only one way to find out, you know, because just add something stupid. I don't care. Like embarrass me. I'm not embarrassed about being embarrassed, you know.
Isn't it funny that like they start off with I love your work and immediately the first thought into our
wrong.
Heads is like, okay, what do you want from me?
Yeah, because the follow-up message, and this is the real reason why, and I'll give an example of like an artist that actually told me about this and why she has such like trust issues, but basically he immediately provided a beat folder link and he's like, if there's ever a chance for me to like put a beat in front of her, this and that, like I'll give you 50% of like whatever I'm doing, blah blah blah. I'm like, this is obviously just reaching out for opportunity. There was no personal connection here. The compliments were needless. You could have emailed me and just said, hey, I don't know if you're ever looking for music, but let me know what I could do to make it make sense. You know, an email would have sufficed, but you didn't have to sugarcoat it in a DM. Literally, I was working with an artist and like it wasn't Keisha or anything, but like she was also pretty well known and she's such a sweetheart. And I think I've told you about her before where I'm like, dude, this is one of the sweetest artists I've ever met. Like she's so kind and everything. And even when I met her, like I didn't know the person I was complimenting her to was her producer. Like I thought he was just another guy in the room and I was like, oh my God, she's so cool, this and that. But you know, me and her got to talking one day because like everybody was running late to the session. And she talked about how she like has all of her original day one friends who like kind of stuck around and she didn't blow up like throughout time. She just kind of had like this like bubble where like suddenly she got signed and the people that stayed around her were still very true and very honest to who they were with her. They didn't like try to like get opportunities, get free tickets. No, it was just always common support. And that's how things were in her neighborhood. But when she moved to LA for the first time, she said, I could not understand whether people were being nice to me because they liked my music or they just wanted to be friends. But then I kept finding out later that they just really wanted something from me. And because of that, I have a hard time making friends now. Like somebody who genuinely came into this with love, just wanting to make friends, genuinely just knew how to make friends. But once she saw like, oh, some people really are just being fake, you know, and it's not to say that they're bad people. It's just they don't know how to communicate. Hey, I'd love to work with you and I don't know how to bridge the gap from point A to B. And a lot of times it comes off disingenuous. So, you know, starting out a conversation with just a simple conversation, finding a mutual hobby, a common interest of some sort is literally all you need. And for me, what's always worked for me is just a common sense of humor. Like I said, if we can shit talk each other, then we'll be fine. I don't care if we work today or in 10 years, we'll work together eventually as long as we get along with each other. Number one rule is be a cool hang.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that we've talked about a lot in the show. Another great reference resource for you, if you haven't already read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, that is like a level one book. Just read it. If you haven't already, you should. It's not something to like die go to the grave with, but it is like some of the most basic skills that you should be having in business. There are other things that I want to talk about real quick as well. I want you to, let's do it like this. I think the best way, I think the most important, the salient point of this conversation here is that everybody wants to be respected. A creative person wants to be creative. And sometimes, and us as engineers, we want to help that person be creative, right? But the artist be creative. But sometimes our words, our language, sometimes even our body language, our attitudes may be coming off incorrectly or be interpreted incorrectly. And we all need to be very aware of that. I think Jesse is incredibly, has a high social IQ, is able to read rooms, is able to read people. He was the one that, he was also one of the ones that really put me on to understanding more of what it means to brown nose and how everybody hates that. And then as I increased my awareness around that by seeing interactions, it became more clear. Let's put it like this. Like, again, like, Lou, it's funny, in that DM, it's as simple as this. Too many compliments. Lou, I love your work. That's great. And I love to hear that. You love to hear that. You're not going to be like, oh, I hate that. Like, don't
I respond with
you.
Fuck you.
Yeah, like, oh, amazing, awesome. But immediately the first thought is, if that's how you're coming off, like, if that's the first thing that you said, immediately that's, like, is a red flag. Like, what do you want from me? I the person that did the best with this is our buddy Mitch. Mitch, please.
Oh, yeah.
We were at a Grammy party. I took him to a Grammy party, and he went up to Los, a popular guitar producer, and worked on a lot of dope R&B hip-hop records, playing guitar, sending in samples. And he thought he recognized him, but didn't. And he just, like, we started just talking to him. Hey, man, what's your name? Los. Like, what are you here for? Oh, you know, the Grammy thing. It's like, no big deal. And it's like, oh. And then Mitch, partway through, like 2 minutes in, realizes, wait, Los, are you the guy that did the guitar for this? And he says, yeah, man, that's dope. And he said, like, what about this? It's like, he's like, whoa, most people don't realize that I worked on that record. He's like, yeah, man, that record was sick. Nonchalant, like 5 minutes into the, 2-3 minutes into the conversation, nonchalant, dropped it. And then didn't talk to Los after that. Like, not to ignore him, but to not treat him differently than the other people in the conversation. And I think that was, like, the most intelligent, thoughtful move. I think he didn't talk to Los out of fear of what I've taught him about this sort of stuff. Like, he didn't want to come off too brown nosy.
Did you give him the celebrity treatment training?
Yeah, not quite. But I mean, like, these things that we're talking about right now are things that we have thought about a lot over the course of years. Yeah, and Los was immediately, like, captured by Mitch. And he's like, yo, what's your Instagram? And they followed each other on Instagram. He became a friend of Mitch. It was just that easy, from not overhyping it. Like, oh, acknowledgement. Oh, cool, dude. Oh, you're that guy. Dope. And not treating them differently.
Yeah.
There's something, and I think that is a skill that's difficult to do. And I think that invites collaboration, like that spirit. And it's so difficult because music industry is hard. It is hard to get the word in. It's hard to make money from. And it immediately, the difficulty of the industry can make people feel desperate. And that is the word that I would like to use to describe anybody that does overcompliment someone. It feels desperate. Lou, have you, I mean, I have multiple times. Lou, can you remember a time that you've been unintentionally desperate sounding?
Yeah.
I can think of so many times. Is there a story that you can tell that off the top of your mind? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's totally cool. To be honest, like I said, I self-identify as an introvert. Whoa. But no, honestly speaking, like, when put on the spot and put in front of people, I do pretty okay, I like to think. I don't think I'm great at conversations. And more times than not, I actually get in my own head and start thinking, like, am I sounding stupid? Should I shut up? But I'm especially bad at DMing or messaging somebody for the first time, even if we've met already, because I'm not just trying to be the hey guy. Because anytime I get a DM and I've never met this person before and it just says hey, I'm like, hi, what do you want? Who are you? Like what? Because I'm just as confused by the message as I am generally throughout the day if I don't know what's going on. So there recently, like I've just kind of been like looking at new music and just kind of looking to see what's out there that's not already within like my realm of music that I listen to or anything or people that I work with, mainly because I just want to expand a little bit, you know? But when writing a message, I have a hard time like just kind of stating my case without sounding needy or anything, or at least I have a hard time thinking it doesn't sound needy because I also know what kind of things I don't like getting, and finding that middle ground is a little bit difficult. So I remember like recently I sent out a message just saying like, hey, I noticed you play like this, oh my God, what is it called? They're like a Fender copy. They're like kind of like the boutique-y super Fender guitars, if that makes sense. Like you see like upper class guitarists using them all the time. I think like the cheapest like pro model that they have is like $1,500. But I used to sell them back when I was at Sam Ash, and only very specific types of people ever bought them. And they weren't ever like douchey. It was kind of like one of those brands that were like upper echelon, but like down to earth people knew about them and could afford them, you know? And I just reached out asking about the guitar. He's like, oh yeah, I like it for this, I like it for that, but you know, my real pride and joy is my 5150 that's been refurbished with the same tubes to match and blah 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 to the original design. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And we just kind of started talking about a little bit of guitar stuff. And then I threw in the compliment, kind of like the Mitch method. We'll call it the Mitch method. That's where we're diming that one. But threw in the compliment later. I'm like, yeah, you know, I noticed like a lot of people who really know what they're doing tend to have this guitar. And I was looking through your portfolio and it looks really cool. Like, do you work with any engineers or anything? And then right there and there in my head, I'm like, That's the pitch phrase. I shouldn't have said that. You know, it's not about if he works with any engineers. It's like, where do you work out of?
What would have been a better question? You're obviously trying to get something from it.
Exactly. And when I'm in conversation with people, I'm just trying to have a good time because we're in front of each other and this is awkward for me. And I'm assuming it's awkward for you. So I'm trying to break the awkward barrier. But when in DMs, you can't read each other's facial expressions. You don't know if it's working or not. So I've always had an issue with communication over written text. And for me, that's just, I feel like I bomb at that. Well, if I can get in front of somebody, I can win them over. But because there's no expression via text, I have a huge difficulty in that. And that's where I feel like a lot of DMs become disingenuous versus just showing up to an event that they may be hosting or they may be involved with and this and that. And trying to meet them in person, for me, feels like a better opportunity.
Yeah. Also, yeah. As far as writing goes, I agree with you. It is more difficult to express correctly through written text. That being said, being able to properly articulate your feelings is the biggest weapon you can wield. So I think that I am one of those people that is bad. I failed AP 11, English 11 test because I'm bad at writing.
I hope to one day get a text from you that just says, I am filled with rage. That's the most articulate way you can tell me you're angry.
No, but being able to properly articulate with written language is an important skill. And I would say that if you are not good with it or if you didn't go to school, if you are, lack of better words, if we are ignorant of text-based articulation, then that is a skill that we should learn to some extent. I'm not going to let people. Anyway, the last thing I want to talk about, Lou. Thank you so much. This same thing happens to me all the time, dude. Is saying getting on accident, dude. It happens most of the time on accident, which is proves my point even more. Like, we're not trying to brown nose. We're not trying to do that. It's just like the subconscious, like, I hate to say hierarchy of like social status, but like, that's what it is. Anyway, like, desperation. Last thing I want to talk about, sorry, Lou, is I'm getting off on tangents, is bullying. Mm-hmm. And dude, this is crazy. This something came up on my TikTok recently. And this is gonna, I hope, I don't know what I want. I want to increase the awareness on this. But I saw a TikTok, and this is, this sort of genre of media is pretty normal. Look at Doja Cat and Chris Brown and Sam Smith 10 years ago, and look at them now. They've been taken over by Satan, and they like handpick, they handpick images of them wearing like satanic outfits or whatever. And then
I'm not
like,
gonna lie, that
they're like
that.
The industry is satanic, it's filled with demons. And granted, I'm trying to stay out of the theological, but that's typically the biggest bulliers are dogmatic Christians, I will say.
Yeah.
And they use theology as an excuse to put people that are doing well so out of their circle of understanding that they just demonize them. Which, by the way, the creation of Satan as an entity was a... I'm not going to get into it. Okay, yeah. Regardless. Okay. Regardless. This straight up... Okay, let's assume that they have gone crazy, right? They have got... Let's say Doja Cat has gone crazy since her success. I'm going to tell you exactly what's caused her to be crazy. It's bullying posts like that. That's what makes her go crazy. Like, we've talked about loneliness. And Lou, this is something that I'm very passionate about, is we are so against bullying disabled people and bullying against young, like among children, but we constantly as a society bully each other and as adults, and it's normalized. And it is insane to me. I do not understand. Like, if Doja Cat has gone crazy, it's because we as a society fucking keep bullying her and gaslighting her into thinking that she is indeed satanic, where she has, as a creative, has no other choice than to say, maybe I am, and has to embrace it as a sense of self-acceptance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, dude, the loneliest people that you and I both know are the biggest, most successful artists, creatives.
Yeah.
They are the loneliest people. Like, fucking love Keisha Cole, love Trey Songz, but they are undeniably significantly more lonely than any normal pedestrian that we see every day.
Mm-hmm.
There is difficult to trust. It's difficult to discern who is actually there to, because they like you, they care for you. And you have to rely on day one friends that knew you before you were famous, right?
Yeah.
Because they were there when you didn't have anything. And so obviously the logic, it makes sense that you trust them when you have everything. But I'm so upset with people that demonize these celebrities and say that they are, within the theological realm, they are demonic, they have been guided by Satan, the music industry is filled with demons, and there are bad people. They're literally like the Nickelodeon special thing. It's like, there are predators out here, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not different than any other industry. There are doctors, regular family doctors that are also predators. Like just because it's in the news doesn't mean it's more prevalent.
Yeah. Access to information did not necessarily make it to where this is happening more. It's just opened our eyes a bit more.
Yeah. And this is, it's just confirmation bias. People, I like to think about it like this. People that don't know these celebrities on a firsthand basis, like, mm-hmm. they see themselves as so far away from that level in the hierarchy that there's no other way to cognitively manage that difference than to demonize them. So in order to feel superior, people that with extreme superiority complex from a feeling of inadequacy has to demonize those doing well. This is also a commentary on those that hate the rich for no other reason than to be rich and to demonize the rich, which, by the way, to me, all it is manifestation of poverty for the rest of your life if you demonize the rich. Don't do that. That's just manifesting poverty. I'm not saying that the rich are innocent, and I'm not being defensive or all apologetic about the wealthy. What I am saying is that they are not half as bad as people generalize them to be. And they get the, okay. Anyway, sorry. In general, the point is stop the fucking bullying. That is, and if you cannot see what this TikToker demonizing Doja Cat as anything other than bullying, then something is wrong with you cognitively. Your ego, something is messed up, and you need to seek help. You need to figure it out what it is. Who in your life is removing you from society so much and from understanding so much that you are unable to discern that is bullying? Like, whether it's a parent, a sibling, a pastor, it doesn't fucking matter. The point is, those are the real demons in your life. Do not bully those. Why would you do, especially if you're trying to make it in the industry? Leslie Brathwaite said to me, the moment that you think modern music is no longer, what did he say?
Good.
The moment that you think modern music is no longer applicable, then your career is no longer applicable. Or like, if you don't think that modern music is good, then your career is no longer good, or something along that line. And as professionals, as someone that I hope, if you're listening to the podcast, you aspire to do well, to get Grammys, right? Potentially. This is a part of your life that you need to understand, is these people are incredibly, these celebrities are incredibly misjudged constantly. And it takes, and it's difficult for me as a normal person, as a pedestrian, to watch. It is extremely, I can't tell if you can hear the pain that I feel on behalf of these guys. Like, Lou, you know firsthand more than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, if there's somebody I care about in the world, I definitely go to bat for them. And you've seen that even yourself, even when we work together. Like, if I feel like, yo, we should reconsider a position on this, you know, it's because usually I feel kind of tied to something. And usually the people that I work with, if I work well with them, we're good people to each other, I typically will try to go the extra mile for them. Main reason is just like, I want to make sure they're good. I want to make sure we're good. And nobody wants to have a difficult time. But I also know what's going on in their life, because when you build a good enough relationship, they'll let you know what's going on in their life, you know? And sometimes you do hear about like the shit that's going on. Like, I've heard some of the craziest celebrity drama that you'll never hear on TV or in the news outlets, that you're just kind of like sitting there like, fuck, man, this is like a whole other level of things that we don't see. We don't know that they deal with, that at a certain point, I wouldn't say I'm feeling empathetic or anything necessarily, but you're like, damn, I wish I could make part of your life easier. And that's where you're kind of like, you know what? I don't have anything to say about you right now, and I don't feel like talking shit to you because you probably got enough shit going on. I'm just going to continue doing my part, and we're not going to try to sugarcoat things. I'm not going to try to make you feel distrustful in our relationship or anything, because it seems like you got other shit you need to figure out before, you know, you have anything else to add to your plate. You know, and that's kind of the reality. That's why a lot of people, when you talk about bullying, part of what I hear, part of the way I can see people reacting to this, as far as those who have to deal with the bullying, like the bullied people, is like, well, now you kind of see why I have distrust issues, because some of the people that they're talking to are also feeding the machine that's also bullying them. And unfortunately, that's one of those, like, if you start talking too much to somebody, if you start getting too friendly with somebody and start saying certain things to the wrong person, they could use that as fuel against you at a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and bullying's not going to stop. It's more, I'm more speaking on the side of like, become personally aware as a person, like to
exactly.
conquer
that's
yourself.
Why, like,
humans
exactly.
are never going to stop bullying. Yeah,
exactly. That's why I'm saying you have to be careful about how you approach people as a new person, because you want to build trust and familiarity. You don't want to build on the notion of like, what do they want? What is it that they're after realistically? Because a lot of these people in those higher places, you know, it's kind of funny because the number one place I hear this a lot, it is in the dating realm of celebrities, which is like, they can't even tell if the person they're getting into a relationship really wants them for them or for their success or what they can get out of the relationship. Same thing for those that are trying to work with them, because you've even described it as starting a business with somebody is like dating, you know, and a long-term business, it's almost like you're married to your partner. And the reality is, you have to build on a foundation of trust. Can I talk to you? Can we make sure that we can have a difficult conversation without being at each other's throat? You know, realistically, a lot of these people that we're trying to work with, the people that we want to network with and grow with, they probably have 1,000 other people hitting them up, trying to work with them, and have all had terrible intros to their conversation. So they see little flags and they start picking up on little patterns. And that's where you kind of want to stand out by literally, you don't have to shoot your shot right in the first message or in the first hello. You could just be a cool person that stood out by just being a cool person.
That's true.
Yeah.
Big amen to that. Okay. Before we finish up and go back to the topic of collaboration and lowering egos for the sake of progress and creativity, the last thing I want to do is I want to, this is like something that I've been doing recently. So it's an inside joke that Lou and every listener that hears, now we can get to be a part of this. This is a fun inside joke that we can all have.
Oh.
And I'm going to start off with an example. But and then I'm going to extract and extrapolate into a bigger idea, right? So there's a Twitter feed. No, maybe it was on Threads. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. The same thing. Either way, someone posted.
It's called X.
When I was 2, my sister was double my age. I'm now 40. How old is my sister? Okay. Low IQ people will do a number other than 42, right? Other than 42. That's very low IQ. And here's the argument. And this is the fun part. Everybody, even if you're slightly intelligent, normal IQ people, and including low IQ people, will post 42, will be correct. Will be correct. And then, you know what the high IQ people do?
They post the wrong number.
Well, the real high IQ people don't even have that in their algorithms because that's dumb as shit. but let's do this. Let's play a little game. The real high IQ people will sit there and understand, and we're not mocking. We're not bullying. We're not mocking, but kind of a little bit. And this is contradictory to everything that I just said in the last little bit. But we can sit there and watch and giggle to ourselves as we watch strings of people that feel the need to prove themselves to the internet by answering a dumb question online. like it's laughable. Like, where did that level of inferiority come from? Like, why do you feel like you need to prove yourself?
Yeah.
And then of course the trolls are the ones with the high IQ. No, I'm just kidding. Like, the answer is actually 80, duh. It says there's double my age. Answer's
so
80.
It's kind of funny because, like, I've seen where certain accounts, they'll be like influence accounts, like whether it be like whatever, political, comedic, whatever, it doesn't matter. But they'll purposely misspell words just to get their interactions up because need to prove that the word was misspelled. I'm like, I'm sorry, did you not see what they did? You literally walked right into it. You got their algorithm working. You got the interactions, you got the likes. Now people are correcting you in whether it's an Oxford comma or a regular comma. I'm sorry, but like, why? You should have left that one alone. Now it's going to pop up more in your feed, and all because you wanted to spell check somebody.
Yeah, and also, like, it's funny, like, trolls, at the end of the day, trolls typically like the feeling of superiority by showing power over emotion. So if I can piss you off by saying something obviously dumb and you don't realize that I'm being sarcastic because it's obviously dumb and you think I'm being serious because you're not dumb enough to understand that that was obviously incorrect and you think so little of humanity that you believe someone actually will believe in that, it's like, it's fun. Like, for, I don't do this, I'm not a troll, but I can understand the thrill of showing superiority and dominance through controlling other people's emotions. So the high IQ thing is to be more Buddhist in approach and is to realize when someone cuts you off, you don't need to create a false narrative about how they're a dick, they're just bad at driving because of some sexist or racist thing that you really think in the moment. Fucking turd. The only truth is that they cut you off. That is the only truth. There is no other truth that it exists. And the narrative and your feeling towards that truth changes if you understood that they cut you off because their wife is in the front seat about to have a baby. Or they may be distracted because one of their parents just died. So they're a little distracted. They weren't paying attention. Or if you understood Occam's razor. Was it Occam's razor? Let's see. Hold on, not Occam's razor. What is the other one? Oh, freak. How does it go? The razor, the idea, the problem solving device that we use is, do not attribute to malice, which can easily be attributed to stupidity or ignorance. The idea that people are living in their own lives in their own personal self-interest, and because someone cut you off does not mean it's malicious. They could have just been stupid and not been paying attention. And the fact that you immediately attribute it to malice shows that you in those moments probably make those decisions based on malice and is more a reflection of your own. So this is the game that I was talking about earlier. Next time you see comments that piss you off or comments that upset you, don't be pissed. Just know that these people are admitting online how weak they truly are. And it's like a sad thing. Like, oh wow, like you really believe this? That's crazy. Like, that's very sad. And if you can approach, and the reason why this is good actually, is if you can approach things and realize how, if you're able to slowly learn how to discern how these emotions, opinions, and these words reflect, like more intuitively understand how that reflects their internal perspectives and challenges in life, then it's going to be easier to become friends with people. It's going to be easier to approach. It's way easier to approach random strangers at a Grammy party where everybody's trying to look cool, trying to act important, want to be seen as important. It's hard to go up to a random stranger and start a conversation. It's very intimidating unless you get to the same level and realize, oh, we're all just socially anxious and we're all just trying to look cool.
Yeah.
And once you kind of understand that, like, oh, this is just us being humans and none of us are that special. We're all just socially anxious, maybe slightly autistic. Like, that makes approaching people so much easier.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. The way I look at it is everybody's scared of going to the gym because they're like, oh, but what if I'm doing the workout wrong? What if, you know, I'm not as in shape as the other people? Or people are going to be looking at, oh, look at this fatty working out. I'm like, dude, everybody at the gym feels the same exact way. That shouldn't really be the barrier to going. Like, I'm not saying it shouldn't be a barrier. It could be a barrier. You know, everybody's socially anxious. I sure as shit know that I am. But realistically speaking, the moment you start looking around the gym and having that thought, you're like, suddenly life got a little bit easier. Suddenly I'm a little more comfortable going to the gym. Suddenly, you know, it's not that I'm empathetic of the world or anything, but I have a bit better understanding that, hey, if I'm nervous, that guy's probably nervous too, to be honest.
Yeah. There's also like the idea of like, I mean, you, Lou, as a long time, relatively long time gym goer, and me as a runner, when I see someone morbidly obese, like very unhealthy, running on the trail near me, there is nothing in my mind other than, holy shit, you go girl, you go guy.
Yeah.
Like the biggest, like, and oftentimes I try to say it out loud. Like, you go, like,
I'll say it like this. I go into the gym, I feel like I see the same thing, not necessarily with overweight people, because I still put myself in the demographic of overweight. I'm not as overweight as some of the people I see there, but I see the mutual goal. I see the mutual goal. But there was one guy that I saw there that had me thoroughly impressed. I've seen the guy like 3 or 4 times before, never saw a phone out, never saw any kind of like indicators that he's an influencer or anything of the type. Cause you already see the signs when you go to the gym. The moment you see a phone on a stand, you're like, don't talk to that person. Not that they're a bad person, but it's like, hey man, like, I don't want to be in your feed. I don't want to be anywhere near. Like, I'm good. But the funny thing is, I saw a guy with one arm. And this motherfucker was squatting 4 plates on each side for 4 sets of 10. Then I see him go to, like, the actual, like, deadlifts. And he's doing one-arm deadlifts and everything. And I'm just watching him. I'm like, this motherfucker never gave up. He's got one arm and he's more jacked and built than anybody at this gym. And he doesn't even seem like he's trying to showboat or anything. He's got proper form. And I'm just like mind blown by like, this is significantly more impressive than anything else. And I'm there with my sister and Anna, and something just kind of clicked in me. I'm like, I have to go meet this person.
Yeah,
I have to go meet this person, introduce myself. I literally walked up to the guy. I'm like, hey, man, I'm not trying to sound weird, but like, I'm over here working out and I'm like deadlifting 3 plates. And I know that's a workout for me. And I'm using two arms, and what you're doing is so fucking inspirational and shit. I'm looking at myself like I'm a little bitch. Like, bro, keep doing what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing. He looked at me. He's like, dude, thank you. Like, what?
We're all insecure, man.
Like, he was just blown away that I'm like, dude, you realize that, like, you literally removed the mentality of handicap or, like, or anything. Like, you're outdoing everybody next to you. And you don't even got a camera out trying to show it to the world or anything. Like, bro, like, hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to, we all have filters and biases. Of course, I'm not free from my filters and biases and my internal problems that I have. But the point is, I'm trying to become more aware. And I hope that everybody that's listening is also starting to become a little bit more aware if you're not aware already. Statistically speaking, those that listen to podcasts are higher IQ. That is just statistics. I mean, you can't deny the
good
empirical
job,
data.
Smarty pants.
You can't deny the empirical data. You know, and
you think you're some kind of wicked smart guy?
So the next thing, to finish up the game theory thing here on my end is, no, not game theory. I don't want to gamify. That's very judgmental. But the idea of, like, let's put it like this too. Every time you see Music Tech post about, like, recently Music Tech was posting articles about how Spotify actually paid the most amount of revenue from streaming this year.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I want you to realize everybody that's complaining in the comments, in other words, is admitting publicly on the internet that not only are they not currently doing well, but they have no hope that they will ever do well.
Yeah.
Because anybody that actually thinks that they can eventually get to the level of doing well won't complain about good news like that.
Yeah.
And the only people that do are trying to express superiority through extreme feelings of inferiority. So don't do that. You're manifesting poverty. That's what you're doing when you complain about good news that Spotify put out. You're manifesting poverty. Regardless of whether or not you're right or wrong, you're manifesting poverty. Stop that fucking shit. You're looking like an insect. You're infantilizing yourself. You're looking like a little bitch. That's what you look like to anybody that's actually doing well and knows about how difficult it is to do well and how much work. Because every time that you say that, I can't believe I'm not doing half as well, what you're also doing is, and yes, there are few and far between that didn't have to work very hard to get to where they're at, but I would say that that's very few and far between. Most of us, if you complain, what you're subconsciously doing is also
justifying your loss.
Justifying your loss, and you're putting down everybody else that has done well through much intense hard work, probably harder work than you've put in. So I want to be clear on that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're kind of got off topic, but go ahead, Lou.
I was going to say, somebody sent me that link to the article and everything, and I saw it like previously before, I forget where, but somebody had brought it up as a point of conversation, just asking like, hey, what's your opinion on this? And I'm like, I mean, makes sense. They're the biggest platform. Like, what do you mean? Like, what exactly are you looking for me to say? You know, turns out the real basis of the conversation that they're asking, they're like, how is it that only, I think it was like, what was it, like 15-20% of the population on Spotify is making more than $16,500 a year in royalties from it. I forget what the number was, so I'm not going to quote exact numbers or anything, but I just told them, like, well, let's put it in the context outside of music. I think this directly correlates to people's work ethic. How many people do you know that claim to engineer, that claim to mix, that claim to master, claim to do whatever the fuck they do, or even just run a business in general, whether it be running a grocery store or anything? How many of them do you think, as a percentage, really succeed to the point where they can start a chain, where they can start expanding, where they can start scaling? I think it has more to do with your work ethic and how well you prepared yourself as a business, because this is the music business, that will show if you become part of one bracket or the next. Those that are making in the millions, sure, they've got label backing. I'm sure Drake's up there. I'm sure Kendrick's up there somewhere. But, you know, they have an entire system and business behind it that actually is tested and proven. If you're just a new artist, this is your first year, and you wrote the most groundbreaking record, but you did no social media, reels, TikToks, anything. You didn't do any email captures. You're not performing at any shows. You have nothing to complain about. You still got a lot of work to do before this becomes profitable. Writing the song and recording it and putting it out was probably the most costly part of the venture at the starting point, because you had to invest into it. Nobody's paying for your record when they've never heard a single record from you. But, you know, those statistics are showing those that seemingly have found a way to make it work. you know, which to me just says somebody got their business shoes on and got to work.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I agree. There's like one other thought that I wanted to add in. We understand that most people listening to this, the vast majority of people are not quite at the level where they are making what they want from their income from music. If you were, you would, I don't know, like,
no,
I don't want to say that you don't need education if you're doing well, but I am saying that, like, yeah, it's like they're probably hungry for a reason for education. So one, I think you're in the right place. By the way, I don't want to talk myself up, but you are now listening to, okay, hold on. This is going to go into a completely different tangent that can be very negative if I'm not careful. So I'm going to say it simply. I'm just going to put it like this. You are listening to a podcast and gaining education from a gold record engineer. And now I am a Billboard charting engineer.
Hell yeah.
And there are very few influencers out there that are actually, while they're teaching, are actually doing well in the industry.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think...
So I just want to say that out loud.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that. We're not going to... That's not any sort of preface into anything else. No other conversations are going to lead... are going to stem from that. But I will say, you're in the right place. You're here at the right time. You subscribe to the right podcast. We're really glad that you're here. And we do hope... And we do truly believe from the bottom of Lou and I's heart, anybody that wants to do well in this industry can do so with some discipline and a great attitude, honestly speaking.
Oh, yeah.
I do think so. For example, I do think it's difficult to move from Oklahoma to Los Angeles or from Oklahoma to Atlanta or to New York or wherever else you want to be or to whatever decisions you need to make.
Oh, yeah.
But if there's a lot of people that we meet out here that are not from LA, that they moved, they made the difficult decision to do so, and they're winning because of it. On top of that, they're actually respond, even things as simple as responding to emails on time, being active on social media, answering their calls, offering their services for free at the beginning, whatever they need to do, do whatever it can, whatever it takes, and having discipline while to do so. And the cool thing about discipline, it is you can choose to have it or not. It is somewhat of a skill that some people are more in tune with, that are not, I don't want to say born with it, but some people are naturally a little bit more conscientiousness about, high in conscientiousness about their day-to-day work, and some others are not. And those that are technically creative or more high in openness have a correlation with low in conscientiousness. A negative correlation with conscientiousness. So like if you can practice discipline and improve and like start using to-do lists, get on a schedule, start answering emails on time, you will make yourself stand out. You will do well. And with a positive, optimistic, not scarcity mentality, but abundance mentality, understanding that there are jobs for you out there. There is money for you out there. And you stick at it for a decade. The bar is so, I hate to say it like this because it sounds entitled, but I want to say this in an empowering way. The bar has never been lower. And James and I did an episode about this. To do well in the music industry, the bar has never been lower. With the democratization of attention, with social media, with TikTok, the bar has never been lower. Imagine that. All you have to do is post on social media a little bit more creative than somebody else or in a completely different niche. You have to like use your brain a little bit. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You have to try new things and find out things don't work instead of pumping out the same thing that obviously doesn't work every single time. Like you have to be kind. You have to like be able to make friends, to be able to network, to do the difficult thing of going up to strangers at parties where everybody's trying to look cool. You know, like this is normal. This is normal. And I hope that this is empowering for anybody that's listening. I'm not trying to talk shit and saying you're not this if you're not doing it. The most difficult thing about this industry is years of thinking that you're doing well with absolutely no feedback whatsoever and feeling like you're a failure. Doing that for a decade is tough, but I'm telling you, if you ever let into that mentality and become negative Nancy, because it is enticing to become negative Nancy, it's so easy to blame everybody else. It is so easy. If you do that, your career ends right there. Don't do that. practice mindfulness, practice meditation, get close to God, read the script, whatever fucking it takes to get there from a philosophical, theological, mental wellness place. Get fucking your mind straight. Get your shit together. That's all you need.
I don't know if it's, fuck, what's his name? Big Boy? The big voice in all the Missy Elliott records and tons more. The, let's go! You know what I'm talking about? That's all I hear in the background of that moment.
You're going to be my ad lib.
All right, let's try it out real quick. Ad libs.
All you have to do is get your shit get right. Get your mind right.
Get it right.
Get healed.
Yeah.
Find the Lord. Go to therapy. Forgive your parents.
Oh, Daddy.
Whatever it takes to do well.
You can do it.
Forgive yourself.
No, I won't do that.
Let my people go.
Stay there.
I'm teasing.
All the ad libs start becoming negative.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it is outside of my boundaries to talk about. No, I've talked about it every once in a while, but I'm starting to put up new boundaries to not talk about personal beliefs. But whatever it takes, whatever personal beliefs you have, I think, okay, first off, for those that are more American evangelical, mm-hmm. specifically, not to European Christians, we're talking to American Christians here, especially from yourself. I want to be clear on something. If you have cancer and you pray to the Lord that God will heal your sickness and you refuse to go to the doctor, that is dumb. I'll put it, to put kindly, not even my Down syndrome son would do that, okay? That is dumb. If you have cancer, you should pray and go to the hospital. In the same way, God will not be able to, if you believe in God, God will not be able to heal your soul from past trauma and wounds without therapy. It's as simple as that. You will not get help from God without a vehicle, and the vehicle is therapy. It is proven, it is tried, there is data, it shows. Get your fucking shit together. And this is only for those that are believing in that stuff. And if you don't, practice mindfulness. It is what it is. It be what it be. That's what it is. Understanding Buddhist philosophy is super important. Not theology necessarily, but philosophy is super important. Getting your mind right, getting healed, reading books, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I'm getting on a tangent. I'm so sorry. The point is communicate, collaborate, be careful with your compliments. Do not use ego. That's the common topic we often say. Like, there's a reason why we've talked about that, like, at least 20 times on the podcast over the 300 and 400 fucking podcast episodes we've done. Check your ego. Look them in the eye. Don't do it. Don't take their feedback begrudgingly. Like, don't take their feedback in anger. Like, oh, I'm going to shut up and I'm going to show you that I'm just being quiet here. I'm just staying silent to show you how angry I am. No, like, give them eye contact, give them respect. Understand that you're both on the same page. You both want the same the best product. You're just coming at it from different angles. So, be aware. If anything, it is you as the engineer producer has to allow the artist to thrive. If anybody's going to step down, it is probably going to be the engineer or the producer, right? Not the artist. It is, depending on the situation, that's not across the board. Anyway, hopefully that helps. Thank you so much for listening. Please rate us 5 stars if you like this kind of content. If you like our content at all, if we've helped you out in any way, if we've made you a single dollar, if our tips have made you a single fucking dollar ever in your career, please leave 5 star. I don't know. Yeah, that's great. It really helps us. And it's a free way of doing that. It's the best tip that you can give us. Otherwise, we have exclusive episodes 2 times a week, right? And go check that out. MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.